if I didn't have this asset, this resource, this strength in my business, what would I do? Would I pick that one back up, or is there a better option? So yeah, so have a revolution. And if it's been a while since you've had a revolution, then there's a good chance that you could be vulnerable to disruption from somebody starting up and doesn't have those assets and resources, but is willing to think about the solutions that customers want now and find ways to solve those problems.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most inspirational minds in business and in real estate for the best tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean.
And I'm Mark Edwards. How are we doing today, Sam?
We're doing really well, actually. Two phrases that I don't like very much, and I never have. And one of them is disruption, and the other one is be curious. And they're kind of connected because everyone says, oh, disruption. Mm-hmm. And the other side of the argument is, well, the answer to disruption is to be curious. Mm. What do you do with those two pieces of information? You really need to delve into it a bit further. And I guess my guest today, interesting guy, Gihan Pereira, a lot of people do know him in the industry because he's been on the speaking circuit for a little while. Mm-hmm. And he quite rightly points out that when it came to things like Uber, the term was disruptive innovation. And basically then people just kind of dropped the innovation and just called them a disruptor.
It's a little bit more sensational, isn't it?
Well, it is a bit. It's kind of like the news. It's like Sandra Sully, you know, who would watch Sandra or Tracy if they got on the news at night and said good evening and then told you why it was instead of why it's not. Anyway, disruptor is a much better headline than innovator. But interestingly, Gihan's book, and we do talk about this, is How to Innovate Within Your Business.
When you say those two words, you know, sort of in isolation, are you a disruptor or are you an innovator? To be an innovator, you feel as though it's a lot more positive, it's a lot more energetic, it's got a better vibe than just being the disruptor of the industry.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is be curious. I mean, okay, we know that we've got to look outside the industry, mm-hmm. and we know that we've got to be, you know, mindful of other things that are going on. I think there is a fine line between curiosity and shiny object syndrome.
Distraction, yeah.
So I'm not sure that be curious is that helpful. But in this, you know, I talked to Gihan about what be curious actually means and how you can implement that in your business. For example, if you were to set up your business today, what would you change? If you were a customer of your business, what would you change? And so this discussion is actually pretty practical on some of the things that you should be thinking about moving into 2020 after you've had a good Christmas break, obviously, is to, you know, start thinking about your business when you've got a bit of clear airspace and think about some of the things that, you know, you might adjust for 2020.
This time of year really does give ourselves a great opportunity to be able to be reflective as to the year that's been and the year that you want to move into. So I think there's a lot of great advice and information in this podcast.
Well, actually, yes, one of our innovations this year has been Extra, our action guides.
Absolutely. So, because each episode you take notes from the podcast after you've got an opportunity to have a sit down with a cup of tea and listen to the podcast and write down all the actionable tips out of there.
So I got a phone call from one of our extra subscribers and they said it's just like having the nerd at school who sits up the front take notes for you. And I think I'm flattered.
You're the nerd.
I'm the nerd. Yeah, I'm the nerd. I wear that well. That's it. I'm just like an enterprising Gen Z charging for my study notes.
But you don't have to get out there behind the back of the amenities block and sort of, you know, sort of hit up Sam for the notes. All you need to do is go to eliteagentelevate.com, stick your email address in there, and you'll have the notes for this particular episode. There's another way in which you can get the notes, though, isn't there?
Yeah, well, you don't have to think about it. One is I post the links directly in our Facebook group for Extra and Elite Agent Pro members. So you don't have to stick your email address in every week. You can get them through there directly, or you can get them all bundled up and delivered to your door.
Yes. And how do you do that?
eliteagent.com/extra.
It is a great opportunity to be able to get all of the tips from the month, plus a few extras. that's going to come to you bundled up in a 40-page booklet that you can write on, draw on. It is your own personal almanac for the month and gives you some great opportunities to be able to take some good actionable tips out for your career.
Absolutely. And for now, it is...
on with the show.
So welcome to the podcast, Gihan Pereira.
Thanks very much, Sam. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here because I have only ever actually seen you on video before at other real estate conferences. And I've got to tell you, you have a skill that I've always wanted to have but never did have, which is the ability to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, that's right. I was very popular as a kid, as you can imagine, just being able to solve a Rubik's Cube. That's what everyone wanted to do. Ha ha.
That's exactly what I remember being in high school and, you know, like pulling the damn thing apart. So before we get into anything else, what is the secret to solving the thing?
Oh, look, if you really want to know the secret, it's just following a set of simple rules. So you start with the top layer, then you do the middle layer, then you do the bottom layer. And lots of people start by trying to do sides, but you're better off doing layers because you can keep them in place while you're going on to the next ones. And the real secret to solving it is to do a YouTube search for how to solve a Rubik's Cube, which wasn't around when I was a kid.
No, me neither. We must be a similar vintage.
Exactly.
For people that don't know who you are, can you give us like a little bit of a backstory of what you do and the sort of things that you're working on right now?
Yeah, sure, Sam. So I am now a futurist. So I speak at conferences, I run workshops, help clients with their strategic planning. But when I finished uni a long, long time ago, there wasn't even such a thing as a futurist. So I had a computer science degree, a maths degree. I was a software developer for a while way back in the bad old days of software development. So I did that software development, project management. I started a web design company. It was actually one of Australia's first web design companies. It's now, we closed it down a few years ago. But there was a time when the web was pretty new. Clients were saying to me, do you think this internet thing's a little bit of a fad? There were some clients who were pioneering. They decided to take a bit of a punt on this idea that there's this web and this new way of marketing. And I really admired the sort of people who were doing that. I was like the gold rush time. I was the guy selling the shovels and spades, but they were the ones going out to actually pan for gold or dig for gold. Yeah, so that was a really interesting time. Then I kind of saw the writing on the wall that web design became really easy. It became simpler. It became easy to automate. And before I ended my web design business, I was running workshops on how to build your own website in 2 days. And then later, how to build a really good website in an hour. So I realized, you know, that things are changing. And I was building a lot of websites for professional speakers, trainers, conference organizers. And I decided, well, I'd like to be on that side of the table as well. So that's what I'm doing now as a futurist. So I help people kind of get fit for the future. So some of it's a future they can see, some of it's a future they can't see.
Yeah, I like that expression, get fit for the future, because, you know, as you just alluded to, things are changing very, very, very rapidly. You know, you were just talking about building a website in 2 days and now 2 hours, and now it's probably even, you know, like a few minutes with things like Shopify and stuff like that. Things really keep motoring along very fast. You also have spent some time around the real estate industry as well, speaking at events and things like that. So what interests you about the real estate industry and where we're at right now?
I think Australian real estate is going to be in really high demand because of a position in the world, because we're right here in part of this Asian century. We're a Western country in the fastest growing part of the world. And Australian real estate is going to be in high demand. The real question is the Australian real estate industry going to be in as much demand? And the thing that fascinates me, Sam, is that any business, any industry that has the word agent in it, whether it's insurance agent, real estate agent, mortgage broker, those sort of things, where there's somebody in the middle, it's ripe for disruption. It doesn't mean that the industry is going to die out, but there's a lot of potential for disruption because the internet has now brought buyers and sellers closer to each other. So the real estate industry, which used to have control over the inventory, you couldn't buy a house except through an agent. And now that's changed. And so the industry has to transform. And smart agents, smart principals, and smart groups are doing that. They're making that change. But others who think they can still do things the old way, they're falling behind. And sometimes they're going out of business as well.
your most recent book called Disruption by Design. And one of the things that I really liked in there is, because I'm not a big fan of that word disruption, it's coming from a different place. So you could call it disruption, or you could call it change, or you could call it innovation. But give us a bit of a background of where that title has come from.
Yeah, and it's not about disrupting an industry. It's more about disrupting yourself. Because if you don't disrupt yourself, somebody else is going to disrupt you. So it's about being proactive rather than being reactive. And you're quite right. So you can call it disruption, you can call it innovation. And in fact, the guy who started that, kind of made the word disruption popular, Clay Christensen, he called it disruptive innovation. But everyone seems to have forgotten the innovation part of it, and they just talk about disruption because it's kind of sexier and it gets more media headlines if people say your industry is going to be disrupted. But actually, disruption and innovation are exactly the same thing. It's just disruption when it happens to you. It's innovation when you do it yourself. And there's so many businesses and industries that are just sitting around waiting to be disrupted and not doing enough proactively to innovate. And this book is all about how do you innovate. And it doesn't mean that you have to invent the new iPhone. It means being ahead of the changes that are happening out there in the world. And the key to this is understanding what problems you solve for your customers and clients. And it's always been that way. It's just that because the world's changed, you may now be providing solutions that customers don't want. And customers want different things now. And so the disruptors, the innovators, are the ones who are now solving those problems. And if you're waiting behind, if you're just waiting doing what you've always done, then you will definitely fall behind and eventually be disrupted.
I'm the kind of girl that does like to look at the back page of a book before I've read the whole thing through. And I really like the sand analogy that you made, which is if you have a big pile of sand and you take away one grain of sand, it's not going to make a big difference to the pile of sand. But then eventually at some point, you know, your pile of sand is not going to look like a pile of sand anymore if that keeps happening.
The thing that happens with many businesses is that you just see this one little grain of sand going. So, you know, you might see that somebody's decided to sell direct because they think they can do better, or their brother-in-law tells them they can do better. You may see a landlord who decides to manage their property themselves. You might see a team member who leaves and goes to another agency because they offer slightly better conditions, or they leave the industry because there's something that they're passionate about doing. They've got a social cause there and that they're really, really passionate about. And you see them as little grains of sand, but it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking there are only little grains of sand, and one day you wake up and you don't have a heap of sand anymore. And disruption actually leaves signs, it leaves clues. It's not something that usually happens overnight, and you can actually see that happening all around you. And it's interesting, Sam, I was telling this story at a conference presentation once, and somebody came up to me afterwards and he said, "Oh, I know how you can protect that heap of sand. You concrete it." Right. And so we all had a bit of a laugh about that. And I said, yeah, that's true. Concreting it used to work. And that's what a lot of businesses do. What they try to do is they look at what they've got, their strengths, their assets, their resources, their people, and they try to concrete it. So they say, this is really strong. So we're going to keep it strong and we're going to try and make it stronger. Doesn't work anymore because the world around us is changing, and the concreted piles of sand are the ones that get left behind, and the ones that are shifting and moving are the ones that move along. So it's a big change now. So obviously change is faster than ever before. Don't need me to say that. But what's happening is that what used to work in the past doesn't work anymore. And obviously in the real estate industry, the obvious example is the advertising model has changed. It's moved away from newspapers to online, and that has been a disruption for people in the industry. But that's an obvious one. There are so many others that aren't so obvious, but they're still making a big difference to the industry. And it's kind of happening, and you can see it if you're looking out for it. But if you're still trying to do things the way you've always done and you're trying to concrete your heap of sand, then you're going to miss those changes.
Yeah, and your block of concrete then just kind of sinks to the bottom as well.
Yeah, exactly.
concrete doesn't float. So it's interesting, you know, because people have been talking about disruption in the real estate industry or innovation, both things for quite a while now, as you say. You know, it started with advertising going online, and, you know, the earth is shaking with prop tech right now, and the investment into prop tech and different ways of buying and selling iBuyers in the US and fractional models in Australia and all that sort of thing. And often the solution, like, you know, we hear a lot of speakers come to us and say, well, you know, the solution is just to be curious. And a lot of people, you know, sort of say, well, that's fine, but how exactly do I go about being curious? How exactly do I go about keeping up with what's going on around me? And the first part of your book is about opening up the possibilities. So do you have some practical advice on how real estate business owners can start thinking about what's going on in the world around them and applying it to their business?
Absolutely do. And that being curious is great. And here's a way to channel your curiosity, which is, I think, what you're asking about. I say that the world is moving broadly towards fast, flat, and free. So everything, technology has made our world faster. We're breaking down hierarchies and barriers. That's the flat part of it. And free, people expect more for less. So what's the opposite of that? The opposite of fast, flat, and free is slow, bumpy, and expensive. So if you want to know the biggest potential disruption points in your business and in the industry as a whole, look at what's slow, bumpy, or expensive. And if there's anything that you're doing in your business that's slow, which might mean that people can't, you know, they can't access data on an app because they have to phone you or they have to phone the office during opening hours, then that's slow. If there's anything that's bumpy, if there's anything that's, so bumpy means it's regulated, it's controlled, there's barriers to get through to people, then there will be somebody who comes in and creates a way to make that flat. Or if it's expensive. And expensive could be expensive in cost, it could be expensive in time, it could be that there are hoops to jump through, then somebody will come along and provide a freer version of that. And you've mentioned that already, Sam, like, you know, fractional property investment is a growing area now. And buying property has been an expensive transaction for most people. And then people are coming along and they're providing these fractional investment opportunities. And it's kind of sideswiped many people in the industry because they're not looking at that as their core business. And the question of what is a core business is changing. So they will still find those customers who they're able to serve, but there will be more and more customers who they're not able to serve. So I reckon you should look at slow, bumpy, and expensive, and then look at other options, and that's what you should be curious about.
And that may even mean looking outside the industry. So if you see something that's slow or bumpy in your business, think, well, okay, how are the insurance brokers looking at that problem? Or I guess the taxi industry was the best example with Uber. Like, getting out of a cab was bumpy when you had to give them cash.
Yes.
Or trying to call that call center to be put on hold with Silver Service for a few hours before not getting a taxi.
Yeah.
kind of meets that criteria. There was a phrase you used in the book as well, the zone of delusion. So we all think that, even me, like, I kind of sit here and I sort of think I know what's going on in the industry, and then all of a sudden something will pop up that I had no idea about. So if you could explain your thinking around the zone of delusion and why we need to be aware of it.
Yeah, so think about the things that you know are true. And some of them are actually true, and some of them aren't true. And the things that you think are true that aren't true, that's your zone of delusion. And it's a really dangerous place to be in. And this is a real trap for experienced leaders or anyone experienced in the industry. In your role, the more experience you have, the more you think you know that is actually not true. As you get older, as you get experience and you get wisdom, you know, Sam, you and I know that there are things that we don't know.
Mm.
We're not the teenager who knows everything anymore. There's stuff that we don't know. So that's okay, because we know that we don't know that. So we need to either learn it or hire people who know it, or at least think about it in the future. But the real trap are the things that we think are true, but just aren't true. And that's a zone of delusion. So the example I use is that as kids, you kind of believe in Santa Claus. And then as you grow up, you realize that, I hope I'm not giving you any secrets here, Sam, but I hope you realize that there was a delusion. But that's something now you know is no longer true. But there's so many things now that we just take for granted, but they're just not true anymore. The reason that we still take it for granted is we just don't test it. We don't question our assumptions. There's this inbuilt confirmation bias in people that looks around at the evidence in the world and looks for things that are going to confirm what we already think is true, whether it's true or not. And we have this inbuilt bias that discounts and doesn't see things that aren't true because they don't agree with what we already believe. The best thing that you can do is do everything you can to test the things that you know so that you can reduce, make smaller that zone of delusion.
Absolutely. So the next thing I want to talk about is talent, which is the second place that you spend a lot of time in the book, and the different roles that people in your business or someone else's business can play in innovation. What sort of role can we play in innovating within our business? And then let's have a look at the team, because there's something in the book that really interested me that you talked about, which was reverse mentoring.
So I love this idea of reverse mentoring.
I do too, actually.
Yeah. So traditional mentoring, the older, more senior, more grey-haired person with the higher salary or the corner office, they're the person who mentors the more junior person in the team. And it's great. So mentoring's fantastic. And when I speak at conferences and ask people who's involved in some mentoring program, official or unofficial, lots of people put up their hands. When I say how many are involved in reverse mentoring, very few people do. And reverse mentoring is turning that idea on its head. It's accepting and acknowledging that we, the more experienced, the more senior, the older, wiser people, actually don't know as much about certain things than the more junior people. So I have this client who's the CEO of a law firm in Brisbane, and actually she just retired a couple of years ago, but for the last few years before she retired, she used to do this reverse mentoring. So every 3 months, she would have a mentor, and the mentor would be somebody in the law firm, in the business, and she would look for somebody who was younger. Now, it could be younger in one of three ways. It could be actually younger in age, so it could be a young person. It could be younger in terms of being in the practice, so somebody who's a new recruit, regardless of how old they were. Or it could be younger in the law, so she wants to know, what are the unis teaching law graduates these days? And every couple of weeks, she'd have a coffee with them and just an informal conversation where she gave them permission. She asked for input and she gave them permission to say whatever they liked. They would have that meeting and the younger person would be the mentor. And they would tell her not only about law, but they'd also talk about what consumers are buying nowadays, what young people think about same-sex marriage or retirement or owning property. And yeah, and in real estate, you can imagine that there's some people who say, I don't want to buy a house because then I've got a 30-year loan and a place that I have to live in, or at least there's an asset that I want to maximize, this one place. Whereas there are people who are the generation-wise, the millennials, who are now just coming to 40, and the Generation Z, who are just moving into the workforce, they're much more global and they're much more mobile. They want to live and work around the world, and they may not want to buy a house and have that 30-year asset that they have to look after for some time. So, you know, Janet, the CEO, was getting that sort of input from her mentor, who was a younger person. She was smart enough to recognize that there was some value that that person would have that she could learn from, regardless of her experience and expertise. In fact, despite that experience and expertise.
When I read that little bit there, it reminded me of that movie, you know, Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway, I think, called The Intern. She was running an internet business and he used to run a printing press. But when they came together, she didn't want somebody old being her assistant. But then in the end, she found that she learned as much from him as he learned from her about the new world, which was really, really amazing. And I can think of another example too. I have a 17-year-old daughter, and one day I listened to someone talking about how Generation Z were going to buy their homes. And so I said to her, I said, Amy, how do you expect you're going to buy a house? And she said, I expect that I'll get a curated list of properties that will be suited to me and I'll choose. So that whole, I'm going to go and search for a property, just hadn't even entered her head, because that younger generation is so used to something completely different.
Exactly. And I think, Sam, if you've got a teenager in your life, you've already got a futurist living with you. And are you taking advantage of their futurist skills and ways of thinking? I heard somebody say recently on another podcast, they said, everybody hates change. Nobody likes change. And I don't think that's true. I think the Gen Zs in particular, and some of the younger Gen Ys, they love change. They want change. They're bored if there isn't change. So to say we don't like change may be true for you and me and for a whole bunch of people, but there's a whole bunch of other people who like change, who embrace it, who thrive on change, and we can learn so much from them if we're willing to open our minds to that. And I always say lean in rather than switch off. So if you've got even people in your practice, if you've got people who are younger people who are distracted by social media, instead of saying turn off their social media, why don't you ask them what they're doing? Learn from them and use it as an opportunity to do that reverse mentoring. And you can do that in place or in a more formal way as well.
So that's a great tip, actually, to have a look at what they're doing. And also, if you've got a teenager at home, you've got a futurist that knows everything living with you. So take advantage of that one as well. So let's talk some action points now. There's a lot of really practical checklists in this book, which is something I really enjoyed about it, is that it's not just theory. It's actually you can go through and tick off some of the things that do and don't apply to you. But how can you tell if your business right now is really vulnerable to disruption?
There's a few things. So one is that you've lost touch with your customers, and it comes back to something I said earlier. Do you really understand the problem that you're solving for your customers and clients? So many businesses fall in love with the services that they're offering and every change that they make. So they think they're innovating, so they tweak things here and there, but they do it completely separate from their customers and clients. And I reckon in the real estate industry, you've got a database. You've got a database of buyers. You've got a database of vendors. You've got a database, if you're in property management, you've got a database of landlords. How often do you engage with them? So when we talk about talent, you know, we talked about internal talent, the people in your team, but how well are you engaging with your customers as well? And they're not just the other end of a transaction. If you bring them in as partners in your business, then you can get a lot of value from them. So I think that's one of the first things, is to just look at how often are you engaging with your customers to ask them for help and assistance and ideas for your business, because many of them have it. And they'll have great ideas because they are experts in your business. They're marketing experts, they're business experts in your business, but you may not be asking them. So that's the first thing, like, how disruptible are you? Are we really still solving customer and client problems? And how do you know? So that's one thing. I think the other thing is that it may have been a while since you had a revolution in your business. Okay, so that's a little bit provocative, but what I'm saying is that many businesses evolve. They go step by step by step, increment, 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 and they don't have a revolution. So let me give an example. IT is a really good example. When was the last time you completely threw out your IT system and started again from scratch? So I'm speaking at a real estate conference coming up soon, Sam, where I'll be talking about cybersecurity in real estate. And one of the points I'm going to make, kind of tongue in cheek, is to say, if hackers came along and they completely wiped out your system or locked it, so that's ransomware, and they asked you to pay the ransom and you didn't pay the ransom, so you lost all your data, would that really be such a bad thing? And of course, it is a bad thing. But what would you do differently if that was the case? So what would you, if you completely lost all your IT, all your databases, and you had to start afresh, what would you do? Would you start and buy back and license all the old software that you're using, build those databases again? Or would you look elsewhere? So would you find an app solution? Would you find mobile-friendly software rather than old desktop software that's had this mobile thing added to it? So what would you do differently? So that's an example of a revolution. Now, you don't have to wait for a hacker to do that. You can still ask the question, if I didn't have this asset, this resource, this strength in my business, what would I do? Would I pick that one back up, or is there a better option? So yeah, so have a revolution. And if it's been a while since you've had a revolution, then there's a good chance that you could be vulnerable to disruption from somebody starting up and doesn't have those assets and resources, but is willing to think about the solutions that customers want now and find ways to solve those problems.
As you were talking then, I was just asking myself the question as if I was going to have to answer it. And, you know, you're right. Like, there are a lot of artificial intelligence tools and other things around where it's very easy to get information on people these days, whether it's social media or LinkedIn or Facebook, or, you know, even purpose-built email tools like Email Hunter and, you know, B2B databases out there. So if you did lose your database these days, it may not be the end of the world.
Yeah, that's right. And the reason that many of us don't want to throw away what we've already got is because we've got all that investment of time and money and those sunk costs. And we realize that if we were to start from scratch, there would be a bit of a startup cost. There has to be. There has to be a little bit of a cost to rebuild that from scratch. So we go, oh, we won't do it. But if all you're doing is you're building little bits onto a clunky system and making it even clunkier, but you think you're improving it, maybe it is time to chuck it out and start again. If you're not doing it, there are other people out there who have got nothing to start with, and they're building their business based on what is out there and the best in the world. One of my other reverse mentors is my business manager, Emma. She's one of those people who is a smart Gen Y, smart, wise Gen Y, and she's always asking me, she says, Gihan, you say that we should be considering if we didn't have this, what would you do? So she's always holding me up to those standards as well, which I love, because sometimes we go, okay, we're not going to make the change, but sometimes we say, yeah, absolutely, we should be doing that. And we're doing that with our database at the moment. So we've kind of got this clunky database system. There's three or four systems that don't really talk to each other. And we're just looking around to say what's best practice. We're asking experts and we're just going to switch to it. We're going to bite the bullet and do it because that's our revolution. And if we don't do that, we'll definitely be disrupted.
It's interesting. Like, I think there's an expression that sort of is something like, don't stick to a mistake you made just because you spent a long time making it or something like that.
Yeah.
So there was a couple of other indicators that your business might be ripe for disruption. And one of the other things that you mentioned is that you keep measuring the wrong things. So what do you think are the wrong things to measure and what are the right things?
Again, this comes back to the success that businesses used to have and how you used to measure success. And for large companies, it's things like share price and, market value. For smaller businesses, you would be measuring, and I'm not saying you shouldn't measure these things. You should be measuring things like leads, how many approaches you make. If you do door knocking, how many doors do you knock on? How many meetings do you get? So those are things that you should be measuring, absolutely should be measuring. But maybe there are some other things that you should consider measuring as well. So, for example, how many new initiatives did you try out in the last 30 days and 90 days? How many projects did you try and fail? So Google, for example, Google has this culture of celebrating failure. Because they want people to do these moonshots. They want people to do these big projects and they want them to think big. When they have their quarterly staff meetings, people who fail stand up and say, we tried this, we decided to dump it. And everyone claps, they applaud, they get the pay rise sometimes if they failed. Because they want people to try big things rather than just try the small things that they know they're going to succeed in. So yeah, even testing things like how often are you failing? How often are people speaking up in meetings? Because you want everyone to speak up. You want to tap into the diversity of your team and you want to give them opportunities to speak. How often do people take responsibility for tasks? So they're the sort of things that you should be measuring as well, not just the hard things, but some of the softer things as well, because building up that culture is essential for us moving forward.
Lastly, with some of the action steps, and we've talked about being customer centric a little bit already, but I guess one of the things that you were saying earlier is that it really is critical that you know your customers and to be able to solve the problems of the customers. If you are making assumptions, like, and this is probably where the zone of delusion comes in a little bit, you know, you assume different things about who you're dealing with. What are some practical examples, do you think, or some practical tools that people can use to really get to know their customers?
I'll give you an example with my property manager. So I have two investment properties and a property manager who manages both of them. And twice a year, she has an event at her premises or somewhere close by where she just invites all her customers to come along. So it's a bit of a social thing. So it's a little bit of a get together, know you, get to meet other people. It's a bit of a thank you for your loyalty, but also the opportunity for her to have a chat with people and to get to know them in person, face to face. She also makes an effort to connect with people online. So with her customers, they're connected to her on Facebook or Instagram. So she's making a really big effort to continue to have opportunities to have conversations with their customers. It's a little bit easier in property management because you do have these ongoing relationships, but you don't want a relationship where the only time the customers hear from you is when they either get a monthly statement or they get told about some maintenance that needs to be done on their property. So she's creating other positive experiences as well. But it's not only true in property management. You can do it in sales as well. So in another industry, a financial planning client of mine, what they do, and they're happy for me to share this publicly, is what they do for their clients is every quarter, every 3 months, they have a client-only webinar. And the webinar is a bit of a, could be a market update, it could be what's in the news, it could be what's the impact of the Royal Commission, whatever it is that might be newsworthy of interest to their clients, they have a private webinar for their clients. But they're really smart. What they also do, Sam, is they say to each of their clients, you've got two guest tickets, invite two other people to come along to this webinar. It's a fantastic idea because the client gets to look good because they can invite two of their mates, and the mates get some really valuable information that they wouldn't otherwise get. And of course, the firm, the financial planning business, they get an opportunity to market to potential new clients without, not in an icky way at all. They haven't asked for a referral. They haven't asked for anything. All they're doing is demonstrating value, but they're creating that environment where they can have these ongoing conversations with clients. And I reckon more real estate agents should be doing the same thing, because you've got this database, especially the buyers in your database are interested in what's happening in the market. You can be the person that provides that. You can be at least the person that facilitates that. You could bring in guest experts. You could run it yourself. You could have customers and clients talk about their own experiences. It's just a way to stay in touch with your customers, but also involve them more in your business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it could even be like this. Let's pull in a guest expert like yourself on the future and create that as a piece of content or as a way to engage your customers and gauge their interest on it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the one thing I'd add to that is you want to make it a two-way conversation. So it's great to have all your outbound marketing with your content marketing, whether it's through podcasts or blogs or YouTube channel, but how are you going to make it a two-way conversation so that your customers and clients can also tell you what they care about the most and what they're looking at? Because you might find that you've got somebody in your database who says, oh, you know what, we were going to buy, but now we're looking at this fractional property investment. And if you hadn't heard about that before, that's an area where you can be curious. Then look into it. And so having the two-way conversation is just really, really important.
Yeah, it's been amazing talking to you. Like, I always like to sort of gaze into my crystal ball and have a look at what the future looks like and break down various methods of looking at how to innovate in our business, certainly, and also in the real estate industry. So firstly, I want to thank you for spending some time with us. And we'll leave some links in the show notes so that people know where to get in touch with you and where to get a copy of your book. But I have one last question for you, and that is, if someone was listening to this today, what is the one thing that you would want them to remember about future-proofing their business?
Okay, so I reckon the one thing about getting your business ready for the future is to think about everything that you've done in the past and imagine that it's not going to serve you well for the future. If you can have that mindset and say everything is starting from zero again, so Amazon.com, Jeff Bezos says every day is day one. If this was day one of your business, what would you do? That doesn't mean you throw away everything from the past, but start as if you were throwing it away and then look forward. And if you want a really practical thing to do, I reckon you should look at one simple thing that you can throw away or you can break and then pick up something better. So I made that a challenge for the next week. Think of something that's working really well for you, break it. Not permanently, but imagine breaking it and then pick something else that you could replace it with.
And make it better.
Yeah.
That's awesome advice. Gihan Pereira, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Sam.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.